Hello, this is Tom Turner. I edit the gardenvisit.com website and the landscapearchitecture.org.uk website, and I've written books on both subjects. This podcast is based on a blog post. I think of it as being about design theory, but its title was, Is Jordan Peterson Postmodern? Writing the post reminded me of a video I made about Patrick Geddes, who was the first European to use the term landscape architect in its current sense, which is Olmsted's sense. The similarity is that Peterson and Geddes are both very widely read and a little disorganized in their use of the knowledge. Both draw on science and culture. Both have a fondness for slightly wonky diagrams. And both speak like preachers. With his enormous YouTube following, and with the words maps and architecture in the title of his book, you'd think that either landscape architects or architects would be taking an interest in Peterson. They're put off, perhaps, by his being so often described, wrongly, as far right. Anyway, I was attracted by his interest in narrative and myth, and conclude the video by comparing this with Geoffrey Jellicoe's interests in the collective unconscious and allegory, as illustrated with his design for the memorial to President Kennedy at Runnymede. This podcast is about design, and its theme is that Peterson's ideas can support a fresh approach. Even more important is that framing the narrative is the best hope for landscape architects taking on the role they should have on design teams. Our profession has less need of CAD monkeys than you might think, and more need of Shakespearean understudies than you might think. Here's what I wrote in the blog post. You can find the references on the LAA blog version and the images on the YouTube version. Here we go. Widely admired and widely disparaged, Jordan Peterson's views are in need of further analysis and classification. Politically, the left castigates him as right-wing and even alt-right. Sections of the right do admire him, but Peterson describes himself, reasonably in my opinion, as a classical liberal. Philosophically, I think Peterson is best classified as postmodern. But as a determined foe of plain vanilla postmodernism, Peterson is unlikely to welcome being categorised in this way, any more than he would want to be described as post-Nazi or post-communist or post-something else. Peterson might, however, agree that the argument of his 1999 book, Maps of Meaning, The Architecture of Belief, positions his views after modernism. And his use of the word belief highlights a key difference from the religious scepticism that grew with the scientific method, from Enlightenment rationalism. It caused Ruskin to lament in 1851 that, if only the geologists would let me alone, I could do very well, but those dreadful hammers, I hear the clink of them at the end of every cadence of the Bible verses. Then Nietzsche proclaimed in 1882 that God is dead. And Richard Dawkins wrote in a book on the God delusion that to succumb to the God temptation in either of these guises, biological or cosmological, is an act of intellectual capitulation. Peterson and Dawkins both turned against Christianity in their teens for scientific reasons, but Peterson has turned back. The Wikipedia entry on post-postmodernism notes that consensus on what constitutes an era cannot be easily achieved while that era is still in its early stages. However, a common theme of current attempts to define post-postmodernism is emerging as one where faith, trust, dialogue, performance, and sincerity can work to transcend postmodern irony. Peter was raised in a Catholic family in Canada and relates that when a young man, I asked the minister at one point how he reconciled the story of Genesis with the creation theories of modern science. He had not undertaken such a reconciliation. Furthermore, he seemed convinced in his heart of the evolutionary viewpoint. Peterson therefore abandoned his childhood faith, but he is now sympathetic to religious ideas and persuaded of their importance to acting in the world. As well as Christianity, he references other faiths, Mesopotamian, Jewish, Greek, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, Taoist, and many more. In a 2019 interview about his beliefs, Peterson set out his position as follows.
Nonetheless, act properly, right? To aim at the good with all your heart, right? To dispense with the malevolence and your desire for destruction and revenge and all of that. And to face things courageously and to tell the truth, to speak the truth and to act it out. That's what it means to believe. That's what it means. It doesn't mean to state it. It means to act it out. And unless you act it out, you should be very careful about claiming it. And so I've never been comfortable saying anything other than I try to act as if God exists, because God only knows what you'd be if you truly believed.
These answers are good evidence of Peterson having an intellectual position which, as the Wikipedia article on post-postmodernism phrased it, rests on faith, trust, dialogue, performance, and sincerity. Geoffrey Neilan, in a book on post-postmodernism, acknowledges that the term is just plain ugly. It's infelicitous, difficult to read and to say, as well as nonsensically redundant. Yet he goes on to explain that, for my purposes, the least mellifluous part of the word, the stammering post-post, is the thing that most strongly recommends it. I agree. Though the abbreviation popomo is more chummy. Some of the alternatives to post-postmodernism were collected by Alison Gibbons for an article in the Times Literary Supplement. Her title was, Postmodernism is Dead. What comes next? She wrote that, there are many terms for this new supplanting cultural logic, this shift in the ruling belief system, to name a few, aftermodernism, altermodernism, cosmomodernism, digimodernism, metamodernism, performatism, post-digital, post-humanism, and the clunky post-postmodernism. From this list, my second choice would be metamodernism. And the Google Ngram indicates that it has a 2020 lead over post-postmodern. With the declining trajectory of postmodernism itself, showing that it could be overtaken by either of the new terms. The kinship of metamodernism with metaphysics is appealing to me, and the term is well supported and promoted in a 2017 book with the title Metamodernism, Historicity, Effect and Depth after postmodernism. Seeking to periodize the 20,000s, the authors point to a range of aesthetic phenomena which are characterized by an attempt to incorporate postmodern stylistic and formal conventions while moving beyond them. And adding that, for us, this language is metamodernism. There, we've said it. My reservation about metamodernism is that though the authors of the book see it primarily as a language, its adoption as the name for a period could happen and would depend on another period name, modernism. And this term is well beyond its use-by date. Surely cultural historians cannot long persist in their use of modern for a period which began before 1900. It's ridiculous. So for me, the built-in absurdity of post-postmodern is an attraction. It dramatizes the need for historians of art and culture to settle on a new set of period names, remembering, of course, that a lot of water had to flow under a lot of bridges before Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassical and Romantic gained the relatively settled status they now enjoy. For garden history, which is what I've written most about, my 2013 suggestions for periodizing garden design in the 20th century were arts and crafts style, abstract style, and post-abstract style. I included a diagram for sustainable gardens, but didn't call it the sustainable style. Then, in 2019, I suggested belief style as an alternative. Style, however, is not a popular term with designers. But design historians can scarcely avoid its use. A style is something which you can see when you look back, but which should not guide the creative process. Instead of mentioning styles as the 18th and 19th century predecessors would have done, current designers tend to overuse the personal pronoun. They say, I want, I like, and I'm going to. And when they do this, my thought is, come on, folks, it's not about you, it's about the site, about the times you live in, and about your clients. If the designers are students, I might then recommend a Roland Barthes essay on the death of the author. The aspect of Peterson's work of most interest to designers is his treatment of narrative and myth. Ninian Smart, an analyst of faith traditions, saw mythology as one of the seven dimensions of religion, and he writes of a widely shared sense that myths are dead, mere curiosities of the past, and that the truly modern person has rid himself of symbolic forms, except in the arts, where they are carefully kept in a ghetto. Modernists tend to see themselves as what Barthes called author gods. Peterson uses the Ten Commandments as examples of myths which we still act out, although we can no longer justify our actions. He sees science as a way of understanding the material world and myth as a way of understanding subjective worlds. The commandments are psychological maps which are useful for worldly action, just as cartographic maps are useful for finding your way from A to B. The maps show you where you are, and like design drawings, where you want to get to. P. Peterson's own 12 Rules for Life became a YouTube sensation and an international bestseller. Though appealing, especially to young men, they are idiosyncratic and lack the tested, timeless authority of the Ten Commandments. In his approach to myth, Peterson was inspired, like Jeffrey Jellicoe, by Carl Gustav Jung's concept of the collective unconscious. An interest in the structure and meaning of myth is also associated with Mircea Eliade, who Peterson admires, and with Sir James George Frazer, Claude Lévi-Strauss, Vladimir Propp, and many others. Their work led to the structuralist ambition to uncover the structures that underlie all the things that humans do, think, perceive, and feel. Peterson summarizes his argument in this way: the world can be validly construed as a forum for action as well as a place of things. We describe the world as a place of things using the formal methods of science. The techniques of narrative, however, myth, literature, and drama, portray the world as a forum for action. The two forms of representation have been unnecessarily set at odds, because we have not yet formed a clear picture of their respective domains. The domain of the former is the objective world. What is? From the perspective of intersubjective perception. The domain of the latter is the world of value. What is and what should be? From the perspective of emotion and action. Designers, like clinical psychologists, engage with the world both as a place of things and as a forum for action. They must analyze and understand the often invisible physical and biological structures which underlie the individuality of places, the genius loci. Then they must recommend courses of action. It's a complex task, which can gain much from the techniques of narrative. They are of value in developing and explaining concepts, and in persuading clients of their worth. Jeffrey Jellicoe was a master of this craft, and the three volumes of his Studies in Landscape Design are, for this reason, the most significant of his books and the 20th century's best examples of how to develop and explain sophisticated landscape architecture proposals. With his design for the Kennedy Memorial at Runnymede, Jellicoe developed a particular interest in the invisible world. I've tried to explain this in a YouTube video. For him, it was the world of ideas. For the design approach known as landscape urbanism, it has more to do with landscape structuralism, geology, ecology, hydrology, climatology, and so forth. In 1994, I classified Jellicoe's design approach as postmodern, and later, having read more about postmodernism and about critical theory, this was modified, and I wrote in a blog post that you could see it as a progression from Renaissance to modern to postmodern, or, like me, you can take the view that Jellicoe's approach was always postmodern, using the term in the sense given it by Canon Bernard Iddings Bell. One could take the same view of T.S. Eliot's poetry. It was forward-looking and modern while also traditional. As Winston Churchill said in 1944, "I confess myself to be a great admirer of tradition. The longer you can look back, the farther you can look forward." Often misquoted, rather well, as, "The farther backward you look, the farther forward you can see." Jordan Peterson applies this principle. In his 1926 book, Postmodernism and Other Essays, Iddings Bell argued that religious fundamentalism is unacceptable because of the advance of science, and that a full modernism is also unacceptable because science only takes you so far. Equating modernism with the liberal theology of George Tyrrell and Alfred Loisy, Iddings Bell put forward a postmodernism which welcomed the insights of science but held firm to the core principles of Christianity. Here are some quotations. "The Bible can no longer be regarded as an inerrant touchstone, the holy infallible gift of the eternal to struggling man. Modernism is, properly, a way of looking at religion which originated with Loisy and Tyrrell, two eminent and deposed Roman Catholic priests." Both were excommunicated. "There is no art for art's sake. All art exists for the sake of truth. The scientific intelligentsia now realizes, and for the most part freely admits, that merely by scientific methods, nothing of basic importance, of primary importance, of ontological importance can be discovered. Fundamentalism is hopelessly outdated. Modernism has ceased to be modern. We are ready for some form of postmodernism." Insofar as he exists at this moment, the postmodernist is apt to be a man without a church. Protestantism, modernism, and romanticism alike seem to him to miss this point. Peterson and Jellicoe can be placed in Bell's category of men without a church. They respect modern science, and they respect the myths which have guided humans throughout the ages. My great aunt, who lived through the religious debates of the early 20th century, would have classified their beliefs as something somewhere. I classify them as postmodern. Inspired by Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, I'll end with two conclusions, which might be described as two rules for design, which involve myth and allegory. One, urban and landscape designers should use what Peterson calls maps of meaning. Two, we should all adopt Jellicoe's narrative approach to developing and explaining design proposals. This is what I attempted for the Druck White Lotus School, which will be the subject of a future podcast.